Welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Dr. Hassan Bash, your host, and we're in the studio with Bless, a prison survivor. That's how you self-identify, huh?
Yes, sir.
Bro, it is a pleasure to have you in the studio with us, man.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Prison survivor. That says a lot, right? We always talk about this idea that prison is a dangerous, lonely, and depressing place. And people don't talk enough about that. What does that mean to you to be a prison survivor?
Prison survivor. So can I give you a little history?
Please, please.
So at the age of 16, I did 8 years for a crime, got found guilty. After fighting my case, I exhausted all my appeals. Couldn't get back into the courts. I ended up going down in a Brady violation where I got the sentence exonerated.
You were sentenced to 8 years or you were sentenced to life?
No. I was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
Yeah, that's what I...
And through a Brady violation, I ended up coming back into the courts.
Say more about what the Brady violation is.
So a Brady violation is a civil suit. Mm-hmm. It's basically they violated my due process rights. Mm-hmm. So the system violated my due process rights.
And this is Pennsylvania?
This is Pennsylvania, yeah. Okay. So I ended up coming home and I felt like the system failed me. Mm-hmm. So I went right back to the streets. End up going in for 12. So I did a total of 20 years with only 27 days in between.
Wow.
Yeah.
So from 16 to, 36?
36.
Yeah. That's major.
Major.
So you grew up in prison?
Yeah, that's all I knew.
Where were you at? Pine Grove? This was Pine Grove?
So I was the fourth juvenile in the state of Pennsylvania to be charged as an adult, the first juvenile in the state of Pennsylvania to be sentenced to maximum security prison. They made grade it from my home jail, D Block.
That's rough. Yeah. That's a rough stop at 16 years old.
So the lady that was there, I will never forget, she tells me, we never had nobody your age on our population, so we're going to have to put you in PC. I said, what's PC? She said, protective custody. I said, no, I'm going to population. She said, well, you're going to have to sign some paperwork. Mm-hmm. I said, sign paperwork what? She was like, in case you die, your family can't sue us. I said, in case I die? So at the age of 18, she asks me, she's like, where do you want your body sent? I'm thinking she's playing games. I'm thinking this is a joke. Yeah. I'm like, where my body? I'm 16 years old. I don't know no funerals. I'm like, send me to my mom's house. That's what she put down on
the
piece of paper.
You know what's interesting? We just had someone on the show, on our last episode, we had Sean Briggs, who was on death row. And that was one of the things that stuck with him,
mm-hmm.
is that they asked him, what does he want his body? Why is that? Why does that question stick with everybody? What was it about that question that you remember so much?
Because you would think us being in the state penitentiary, their staff is supposed to protect you. Mm. That's what they say.
So that's when you knew it was unsafe.
That's when I knew it was unsafe. That's when I knew that I was in trouble. Like, no, this is the real deal.
This is serious.
This is serious. This ain't Camp Cupcake. This is the real deal. I did time in Rikers Island. I was in C-74, the adolescent block.
Mm-hmm.
And when I integrated her, that was a different ballgame.
Yeah, you heard that big door close.
That sliding door closed. That sliding door closed.
I was upgraded for it.
Man, you got...
It's a rough stop, man.
700 inmates on the block. I mean, it's real. So I was in B214. That's all in the back, underneath the steps. So you already know that it was serious. It was definitely the real deal. I ended up coming right back.
Well, I want to start by saying welcome home, because
appreciate you.
As you're speaking, a lot of people don't survive that, whether physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, right? Like, a lot of people don't make it out. Even when they do make it out, they're broken, and you're far from broken, you know? What did you learn throughout that experience? 20 years in state penitentiary as a juvenile.
So the person that I am now, it literally took the last maybe 3 years of my sentence for me to be who I am now. So I was running, I was bad. I was mm-hmm. bad. You can Google me. The May 2015 SEI Housedale riot, I mean, I was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
We locked the whole jail down. I mean, it started off with a guy from Allentown and a guy from Philly going at it. We took over the whole entire jail. I was put in solitary confinement for 5.5 years. This all I knew. That's all I knew. I normalized being in prison.
That's right.
I stressed more in the free world than I ever stressed in prison.
The 27 days when you were out. Oh, you mean now, currently?
Yeah, currently.
Yeah. Because you have much more responsibilities.
Right. So I took every program possible to build the best version of myself. But I realized that...
Thinking for a change.
Come on. What's hot? So they made me do moderate... You're aware of it. So you remember when the guy from Philly killed the first police officer in the Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah.
So
So when you got out, you had to take the booster program.
So I was given the green sheet to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And was
the green sheet meaning you were given parole?
Getting paroled, and they took it away from me.
Because he killed that officer. Right,
and they had to do a point system. So it went from violence prevention to moderate, high intensity. So I had to do the 18-month program after I was already
That's right.
supposed to go home. So it just went. I have a man that was, at the time I was, how old was I? I was probably like 26, 27 years old. I had a man that was 32 years old that never committed a violent offense, teaching a high-intensity violence prevention program. Mm. And the video's black and white. And he's telling me, if I come outside and somebody smacks me in my face, I'm supposed to do the three levels of the volcano.
There you go.
Where am I at in that volcano? Yeah. And I'm telling him, I'm like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
If I'm coming out from a grocery store and somebody smacks me, you're telling me I'm supposed to say, time out, hold up, let me see where I'm at in this volcano chart?
That's right.
So I just dove into books. And that saved me. That saved me. I don't watch TV even now to this day. I don't own a TV.
You still read?
Yeah, I still read.
What are you reading right now?
I was actually reading your book, and I was actually reading the 33 Strategies of War.
Okay, shout out to Dr. Bass's book.
Shout out to Dr. Bass.
What do you think? You like it?
Yeah, so right now I'm on chapter 4, Super Fire. Okay. Super Fire, you dropped off the books last week, so yeah, definitely fire.
What's the title of your book going to be? Mine is Beyond the Nightmare. I think you understand the whole concept of nightmares. Yeah. What's the title of yours?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay. Let me know.
That's a good question.
When it comes to you.
That's a good question.
So what message do you have to 16-year-old Bless, the young boy that's out there catching wreck, running around, doing all the wild things that he wants to do? What message do you have to him?
If I can go back and give him a message?
No, you're talking to the Bless of today. His name is different, but, you know, the game is the same.
Stay out the streets. Stay out the streets.
That's simple.
That's my whole life. So my father died on my birthday when I was 2. My mom ain't know how to be a single parent. So I looked for love and affection in the streets. I didn't have it at home. So if I still, I was a straight A student. I had a full scholarship to play for Michigan State football, and I chose the streets.
Wow.
So if I would have just stood in school and stood away from the streets, I would have been.
Your life would look different.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally. Where you from? Born and raised?
I'm born and raised in Harlem.
Shout out to Harlem.
Big Harlem. Harlem World.
Big Harlem. Harlem World. There you go.
Big Harlem World.
What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think about Harlem?
Oh, man, that's home, man. That's I remember home. My mom, my grandma over there, freestyle music every Sunday and Thursday. Diamond Girl, Spring Love.
There you go.
You know, Lil Susie.
There you go.
Cleaning the house, you know, food. Rice and beans.
Yeah. You smile when you talk about it. Yeah. Harlem Hospital. You born in Harlem Hospital.
Harlem Hospital, yeah.
Tell you, my mother worked at Harlem Hospital. Shout out to Mama Bats, man. I remember Harlem Week. Harlem Day it was originally called. Fire. And then it became Harlem Week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you moved from Harlem to Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I ended up catching a case where I ended up doing time in Rikers Island in C-74, the adolescent block. And my family was like, listen, man, we're just going to move you out there so you can stay out.
And it didn't work.
Nah, it just made it worse.
Still chasing something.
Yeah. Went right to the streets.
So what are you chasing today?
Success.
What's that look like?
So I've been home 14 months and 16 days, and I own a house. I rent out 2 apartments. I have 2 successful businesses that I own. I also sell cars, fix cars, and got a detail shop. So it's just me being successful.
Just building businesses. And helping your people in the process.
Yes.
Because that's one thing I know about you, is you always bring your people along.
Yeah, for sure. I try to show them the streets ain't the way.
Are they listening?
Yeah.
What is the reason that so many people choose the streets?
The lies.
What are the lies?
Come over here, we got you, we're a family, we're going to take care of you. I mean, nah, it's all a lie. They're not a family. They're not going to take care of you. As soon as you get locked up, they forget about you.
So what it is we're seeking belonging. We're seeking community. We're seeking belonging. Does that exist outside of the streets and the gangs and the drugs?
Nah.
So that's part of the challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not I think Big said it best. He said, either you're selling crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot. If you're not on the basketball team, what do you have? If you're not on the football team, you know what I mean?
For sure.
So how do we create community and belonging for our youth outside of those things?
I work for Promise Neighborhoods, and I work for Promise Works. It's a workforce development program. I literally took a participant who was homeless, 4 kids. She got put in a shelter through us. Now she lives in a house, 4-bedroom house, and she got her own office where she dispatches nurses to take care elderly at home.
Wow.
So to do that in 60 days, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. That's what I love to do. I give back every day.
A lot of people come on the show and they talk about their love, their passion is helping people. And I hear you saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Where's that come from?
I guess all my life I took away from the community. Mm. So I feel as though it's my time to give back. Mm.
We have a saying we always say, our parents taught it when we were young, if you break it, you fix it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you're speaking to. That we're the ones that have done destruction in our community and we're the ones that have to repair it. What's your message to your people?
Never give up.
That's easier said than done.
Yeah,
man.
It's
never give up.
I work 17 hours a day. I'm waking up at 2:30 in the morning every day.
That's why you can't get in trouble. You don't have any time to get in trouble.
I don't got no time. Yeah. I indulge. My whole life is working.
Yeah.
My whole life is working.
It keeps you busy.
It's giving back. It keeps me busy because me being idle is the devil's playground.
That's right.
So I wake up at 2:30 in the morning. I drive to Fogelsville, go to my warehouse, grab my van, put the supplies. Because I got a construction company.
Mm-hmm.
I drop all the supplies off in all the houses that we're about to do that day.
Mm-hmm.
Also with the cleaning supply as well. Come back, go home, grab my car, drive to Promise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at Promise from 7:30 to 6:30.
Mm.
6:30 I leave Promise, go to Fogelsville, pick up my van, go pick my supplies back up, take pictures, make sure the job got done.
Wow.
I don't get home till like 11:45.
And what changed? Because I would imagine you had that same fervor and energy in the streets, but you were just doing the wrong thing instead of the right thing.
Right. I was raised by my grandparents, and I had the people that I cared about the most I lost. And I had a situation where my sister's father came into my life, and he was the one who taught me construction. He was somebody I looked up to. And it was probably the hardest 52 minutes of my life that I ever endured. He had a lawyer in the hospital reach out to SCI Housedale, the warden, and his dying wish was for him to talk to me while they pull the plug.
Mm.
So
you were his guy.
So he said, when they put me in a room, just with a phone, and I picked up, he's the only person that everybody called me by my middle name. So they didn't want to tell me what was going on. It was 11 o'clock at night. You know, it's weird. I mean, being open your door, knock, Rodriguez, slide your ID in the door, you got to cuff up. What's going on? I'm thinking I'm going to the whole investigation. They take me to education room. They lock me inside a room. And they said, listen, stay in there as long as you want. Just knock when you want. So I'm like, what's going on here? So he was like, grab that phone. So when I sit down, he calls me Shy. So I'm junior. He like, yeah. I'm like, what's going on?
Did you know he was sick?
I didn't know. And he says, I want you to take me to wherever I'm going. I'm like, what you mean? He said, I can't fight no more. And there was things that he told me in the 52 minutes that, like a promise to a man that was passing away. I had a plan. I'd have a sense of direction. So when I came home while Promise Works was starting. It was funny because you was there. It was you and Miss Jeannie. And I didn't know how to use my cell phone, my Google Pixel. And I slammed my phone outside of Promise. I didn't know how to use it. And you grabbed me. And he was like, you and Miss Jeannie was like, what's going on? I said, man, I can't use this phone. Technology's just not it for me. And he was like, you know what? You're in the program. And Promise Work gave me a sense of direction.
Wow.
So I had the plan. Y'all just gave me the sense of direction. And I just ran with it.
That's powerful.
So if I can tell anybody, it's just follow the plan. Follow the plan. Follow your sense of direction.
Follow your plan and follow your sense of direction. Straight from Bless. This is Dr. Betch. You're listening to Let's Talk. We're here with Bless, prison survivor. And I believe there's a lot coming after that, man, in terms of how you'll be self-identified and titles. Because you're a mover and shaker, entrepreneur, mentor, friend, leader. We're going to take a break and we'll come back shortly, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. This is Dr. Hassan Batts in the studio with Bless. Bro, it is a pleasure to have you here. Your story is remarkable, man. From where you've come to all that you continue to give and how I've seen you grow over the last few months, I want to go back to the story about June. June's his name, correct?
Yeah, Junior.
Junior, because the way that it's changed your life. Can you share a little more, shed a little light on that? Because it speaks to your honor that you keep your promises. Most people break their promises. What did he ask you for?
So,
And this is on his deathbed.
Yeah, so he's talking to me. I'm crying, and he's telling me don't cry. And I'll never forget his words. I said, how can I? I said, I lost everybody. You're the only person I got left.
Wow.
And he says, I lived the life of a man. That stuck with me. He said, I lived the life of a man. Don't cry for me. Smile for me. He said, just remember all the good things we did.
And this was your guy. You said this was your sister's father.
But this my sister's father.
He's the man that raised you.
Yeah. And it hurt because he says, you're not my child, but I love you like you my child. And I can be talking to your brother or your sister, but I chose to speak to you. And it's because I love you the most.
Wow.
And he says, they're out here. He said, I'm not even dead yet, and they're already arguing for what they're going to keep. So he says, you know why your grandparents never gave up on you? I said, why? He said, because we see the potential you have in you. He said, but when are you going to open your eyes? He said, when are you going to look in the mirror and you're going to seize your opportunity? And, you know, I'm crying more. And he was like, just don't cry for me. He said, live for me. He said, live for me. I said, how can I live for you? He says, you're going to go home and you're going to do everything that I know you can do. Everything that your grandparents seen to you, he said, we never gave up on you. He said, when you had the life sentence, when you went back in for the 12, we never gave up on you because you're the pillar. I mean, without you, you're the one that keeps this family whole. He was like, so now come home and do what we know you can do. And along the lines, he was like, you know, take care of your sister, you know, take care of your daughter, you know, come out here, you know, be a father to your daughter.
You said this is the longest 52 minutes of your life.
This is the hardest 50. It felt like we spoke for hours.
Yeah.
It felt like we spoke for hours, and it was 52 minutes. And I'm talking, I'm sobbing. I'm talking, I got boogers coming down my nose. I can't cry. Yeah, I can't even really talk. I mean, because if I say something, I felt like somebody squeezing my heart. And he's laughing and joking the whole time.
Yeah.
He was at peace.
Yeah.
He was at peace. He and along them lines, he was like, once again, he's like, don't cry for me. He's like, I lived the life of a man. And he was like, Sha, I love you. And I guess he must have gave her the head nod. And then you can hear the flat line on the phone. And she grabbed the phone. And she says, on above date and time. I mean, Junior Rosario Santa. I mean, just passed away.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was my motivation when I came home.
So the ending of his life was the beginning of your new beginning, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it about that? Like,
exactly what he said. He was like, see that potential that everybody that we see in you.
So you saw it.
I saw it and I grabbed it.
And that's what you're chasing.
And that's what I'm chasing.
Has it been easy?
Oh, no.
I know the answer to that. But.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. There's a lot of things that I didn't know. I didn't know it was $125 for LLC. Mm-hmm. It was easy for me to become a business owner, but mm-hmm. just grasping it.
So you had to learn.
Yeah, I had to learn everything. You know, everybody asks. I work Monday through Sunday, 17 hours. I don't got a day off.
Yeah.
You know, so they ask me, why do you go so hard? Like, why don't you take a day off? I don't got a 401k. I don't got a pension. I don't got a retirement.
Oh, you
got
to play catch up.
You know what I mean, so this is me playing catch up.
Yeah.
So I have to catch up because I got people that really, really rely on me. You know, I got people, when they tell me to show up, I show up. My mm-hmm. guys show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the beacon for my guys. I'm daylight.
That's right.
So I hold the torch. So they follow me. So when they see me from what I was to what I am now.
They know the possibilities.
They know, like, oh, no, we could all do it.
If blessed can change, anyone can change. Right. That's the story I've heard before. If mm-hmm. you can change, anyone can change. How do you take care of yourself? You're working 17 hours a day.
I work.
You got all this pressure on you. What do you do for fun? What do you do for relaxation? What do you do for self-care, for your
mental health? This is my fun. This is my fun. I'm not in a cell. I'm not in a cell.
So you have perspective.
Yeah, I get to wake up.
You went from a life sentence to...
Yeah, I get to wake up every day. Every day I get to wake up and not be in that cell. Yeah. I don't get to hear at 5:45.
Count time.
Lights on, standing, count time.
That's right.
Child, I don't get it. That's I don't right. get to hear that.
Yeah.
I don't get to hear... You had people, in them 5 years of COVID, you had people in the free world killing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They had their whole house to live in. They had TV to watch. They had internet. They had video games. In the state penitentiary, if you didn't take the COVID shot, you got put in solitary confinement. You was locked down and was only able to be out. Not a half hour. 15 minutes. 15 minutes out. It was a 15-minute shower. That's it. The phone, everything came to yourself.
Yeah, they said COVID was a rough time.
It was rough.
In the penitentiary, a lot of people were dying.
Yeah, people were dying. People were killing themselves. People were hanging it up. Can you imagine that? Yeah. Locked down.
So we always say, right, prison is trauma. And then we talk about all trauma survivors deserve healing. But the issue with prison trauma is that it's considered earned trauma. They say you did something and you deserve everything that came with it, right? So you come home and there really aren't any resources for your mental health, for your support, for your healing. Is that what you found?
I didn't find nothing. I didn't find no help. I went through counseling. I went through therapy.
Okay.
They just tried to give me a bunch of medication, yeah. Had me down, had me sleeping. Yeah. Nothing really worked for me. I found work. I found job. So I found promise work.
That's what they did. Yeah,
promise work. They gave me the opportunity of a lifetime. They gave me my business. They showed me construction. They showed me how to work. And through promise work, they gave me the sense of direction. I had the plan. I didn't have the sense of direction. They gave me the sense
you
of direction.
You keep going back to that.
Direction was everything for me. That's all I needed.
How do you come up with a plan, though? Because I think a lot of people don't have the plan. You're not the average Joe.
So my plan was keep up with my promise.
How does someone else come up with the plan? What feedback do you have? What recommendations do you have to someone that's struggling? They just don't know what's next.
So I'm the lead mentor at Promise Works. Mm-hmm. And one of my jobs is to help them plan. Okay. So I ask questions. I ask basic questions. I mean, what do you like to eat? What's your favorite color? I mean, what do you like to do? What do you like to do in your spare time? Now, let me hear your strengths. Let me hear the pros. Let me hear the cons.
Okay.
You know, and a lot of them didn't even know how to do that.
That's right.
A lot of them didn't even know their weaknesses or their strengths.
How could they?
You know, so once I start doing that and they write it on paper and they read it, not see it or hear it, like read it. I'm like, wow.
So they begin to internalize it.
Give
me an example of some strengths that people come up with.
So, for instance, today I had a guy, and he did 15 years. He just came home. He'd been home a month and been in a program for 3 weeks. And gangbanger, vicious gangbanger. I mean, did a bunch of crimes behind the gang. And I asked, I'm like, let me hear some strengths and weaknesses. And he was like, man, all I know is violence.
The streets, that's right.
That's all I know is violence. Yeah. I mean, and I asked him, I'm like, did you help position in your organization? He said, yeah. He said, I had a bunch of people follow me. I said, so you don't got leadership qualities?
That's right.
And I started breaking it down to him. And I said, and you know, he started writing it down. He started writing down leadership, and I mean, communication. And he started writing all these strengths down. He started writing his cons down. And I told him, I said, now we got to make that list, that pro list, bigger than your con list. I asked him, I said, what do you like doing? I said, you did 15 years. I said, I guarantee you got OCD. He said, I do got OCD. He said, how do you know? I said, because you got down on your knees, put the shower shoes on your knees so you wouldn't scrape the knees. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you hit that, one of them old T-shirts to wipe down that floor.
That's right.
And he was like, man, I got bad OCD. I said, yeah, we all do once you have time. I said, do you like cleaning your house? He said, man, I love cleaning my house. I said, so why wouldn't you do something with cleaning?
So that's how you do it. You take it from who they've been, where they're at, and then you help them to find a pathway.
Pathway, yes.
Okay. People usually receptive?
Yes.
So what's your message for a Joe citizen that's sitting at home, that's never been arrested, never been to jail, that's terrified of you, that's terrified of me, that's terrified of the person you're talking of, that thinks they should lock us up and throw away the key?
Give me 5 minutes. Talk to me for 5 minutes. That's all I ask.
That's all it takes.
Give me 5 minutes of your time. I guarantee you'll give me a hug. You'll shake my hand, give me a hug, and you won't take my number down.
So go out and meet people. Come to know your neighbors.
For sure.
Don't judge us off of television.
Right.
Because I could say the same thing. You talk to me for 5 minutes, I think I'm going to change your perspective. And I know you are, and most people that are prison survivors. I think circumstances are what plays a role in it.
Right.
You know, in American Me, there's the scene, I don't know if you remember, when Denzel's mom says, Frank Lucas's mom says, had you been a baseball player, all your brothers would have been baseball players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he chose to sell drugs. So I think exposure opportunities impacts the decisions that are made. What's your dream for your community?
My dream? That's a good question. So my dream for my community is to stop the gang violence.
Mm.
I feel as though that the gangs are overrated. I feel as though...
Now, you say this as someone who's contributed, participated.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's lies. They tell you they're your friends. They tell you they're going to be there. They're going to tell you they're going to take care of you. It's love. It's a brotherhood. Yeah. It's not. Wow. It's not. So if I can, that would be like my number one thing.
Stop the gang violence.
Yeah.
That's powerful. We did some research, man, and we learned youth join gangs for three reasons. The first one is safety. So we say when adults fail to keep kids safe, whether it's in schools, whether it's in juvenile facilities, you talked about C-74, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're in C-74 and the guards don't keep you safe, the administration doesn't keep you safe, you're going to bond together for that basic human right.
Right.
And then we criminalize and pathologize our youth for everyone deserves to be safe. Mm-hmm. And the system has failed us. The second reason we say is belonging. We talked a little bit about that. We say when there are not places, we found where there are not places that kids feel you can't go to the library, you can't go to Starbucks and use the bathroom if you don't have $6 for coffee. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, you're kicked out. You're kicked out of school. I mean, I've been pushed out of school. I would imagine you've been pushed out of school. Mm-hmm. So you have to find places and spaces and groups where you can belong. If you don't play football, basketball, track, right, the gangs are always waiting. And then the third one is the one that people always want to focus on. That's family disruption.
Mm-hmm.
Mom is using, dad's incarcerated, mental health issues in the family. But we say the first two are the ones that are society's responsibility when we fail our youth. Would you agree with that?
100%.
So what do we do as a society? What's the same message to Joe Citizen that's judging kids that are joining gangs? What could he or she do to make things better? And I keep asking you this because you are an expert, right? When we look at these issues, like gang violence, like gun violence, like reentry, hunger, all of the issues that our community is exposed to, we want to go to people like you that are the experts to have the intimate solutions with the problem. So that's why I keep asking you these things.
I think we need more programs. We definitely need more programs. For us to fix our future, future are the kids.
That's right.
They're the kids. So for us to have a better future, we have to target the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the gangs winning?
That's the question. I need you to answer.
Why are the gangs winning? They're winning because they're going to feed them the lie. They're going to tell them we got you. Why? Because, you know, family, like me, like myself, I didn't have love and affection. So I ran to the streets for the love and affection. Got brought into the
gang. And the love wasn't real?
The love was real until you commit a crime.
Until you go to prison.
Until you go to prison.
Yeah.
The love is real until it's time to you to do something and you don't do it. Then you see how they turn on you.
They'll turn on you real quick.
They turn on you quick. That's you didn't want to do that? All right, yeah. Well, we got to jump you now.
Yeah.
What type of family does that?
That's right.
I thought you loved me. I thought you was my bro.
Yeah. I'm doing this because I love you.
Yeah, I'm doing this because I love you. That's right. We'll teach you a lesson. 16 of us is going to jump you because we love you.
Yeah. Correction. What is it called? Correction or something like that.
So I think they're winning because it's more than on the streets. We need more programs. We need more of us, more men like us.
What's the program you're starting?
So
you wake up tomorrow, you have all the resources you need. Tell us the program in closing.
I definitely want my guys, mentors in the schools, you know, reaching out to the kids, kids that need help, just how we have in Promise. You know, when there's somebody that needs help, they have somebody to talk to.
That's right.
Who do they have to talk to right now in the schools? Let's be honest. Who they got to talk to?
Someone they can't relate to.
They can't relate to nobody in there. They can't walk up to a teacher and tell them, like, listen, this is the problem that I got going on, because the teacher's going to, you know, call, you know, child services.
That's right.
And they take them away. So they fear.
You would understand it.
They don't have nobody. They don't have nobody to talk to. The youth don't got nobody
to
talk
to. So you're starting in the schools.
I'm starting in the schools.
Okay. What means the world to you?
My daughter.
Want you to give a shout out to your daughter?
Oh, man. Kehlani. They call her Kalo.
Kalo, okay.
It's my baby.
Shout out to Kalo, man. Bless, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Let's Talk. I'm Dr. Hassan Batts. We're here with Bless. Bless has made it clear. Give him 5 minutes and he will change your mind and your heart about gangs, about violence, about prison, and about reentry. All we need is an opportunity.
That's it.
Have that conversation with your neighbors. Do it with the judgment. Spend some time coming to know people. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.